Hello, my name is Tom Widdicombe and welcome to my podcast, Talking with the Hippies. Today's podcast is a recording that I made with my friend Chris Voisey. Let's just call him the poet from Plymouth. I didn't get on with poetry in school, and for 50 years I haven't been near poems of any sort. But I will say this, I really did enjoy listening to Chris's poems. I hope you do too. Can we just talk about time, Chris, and your thoughts about that in life? Because it's something that interests me, and your approach to your life is fascinating, really.
Time is, it is very interesting, and the thing about it is that, in a way, there is no time. I wrote a poem the other day about this very topic. Funnily enough, it's very short. Shall I read it? Okay, it's called Reality. There is no such day as tomorrow in reality. In reality, even today is only a turn of the earth. Only in the moment of a breath in does life live within our body in reality. So choose well, my friends, the actions you take and the words you speak as this breath surges into you in reality, and make each expression of your being real and true and loving, joyful and kind, before that moment comes when the breath leaves the body for the last time in this reality, and what is left of you will be transported to another dimension of reality. Care of the infinite source of every reality. And that's my take on time.
Okay.
It's it differs from solar system to solar system, from galaxy to galaxy, from human being to human being, in a way, I suppose.
So what's been your evolution of, like, when you were, say, because I know you did an apprenticeship, and you were very much, I don't really know what an apprenticeship is, but I always have envisaged an apprenticeship as like a really, you couldn't get more involved in the world in a way, in that you're going to be working with tools and getting your hands dirty and all that stuff, and tea breaks and stuff.
Yep.
And you've come from there to that poem, and that seems like a huge...
Well, I don't know. I mean, it started when I was 18, you know, or maybe before, you know, when I first started writing poetry. Because I don't know, you know, poetry is such a, you know, once you get beyond the sort of, oh, the flowers in the garden were lovely and the sun was shining and Auntie May was, you know, sat in the sun, shade, or those sort of poems, and you go beyond those sort of poems into more poems which are more universal and meaningful, you're straight into sort of mystical poetry, if you like, or whatever you want to call it, you know, spiritual poetry, and it goes on. And so you can't help but, well, I couldn't, you know, just, you know, because I saw it as a really... It was a really good creative expression of that I could write, you know, that I could use words in a creative and personal way to express what I was going through in different ways, you know, in my life, I suppose. I'm not a political poet or a historical poet, you know, that sort of thing doesn't interest me much, really.
It's about consciousness, isn't it, Chris? It's kind of, so definitely. Your poetry is linked to your experience of life, big time.
Yeah, definitely. And my, you know, what I was going through at a certain time, or sometimes, you know, it's a more universal theme, because I see, well, I'm a human being, you know, and I don't think, you know, I mean, okay, everyone's different, you know, but there are certain things which are applicable to all human beings. And so whatever I say is, you know, I can, you know, generally feel that, you know, other people are going to feel or think and, you know, understand. So, yeah.
I mean, that poem you just read out there is a very kind of... could you have written that when you were a young man?
Well, I did write similar things, very short ones. Well, in fact, I think there's one in here, probably, illustrations. This was in, 68, 67. It's from a series called Illustrations, and this is one of those. The truth doesn't always show when the model stands naked, but even if it did, how would the artist paint it? That's it.
So let's talk about your consciousness, Chris, through your life. I mean, you kind of grew up in this working class situation, and then you became this apprentice and you what doing electric wiring and stuff.
Mostly on ships.
Right, you actually worked on ships.
First couple of years anyway, and then it was various establishments around Plymouth, because I was with actually my apprenticeship was with what was called the Ministry of Public Building and Works, not with the Ministry of Defence, the Navy or whatever, you know, but it was, you know, working in, you know, like places like the Marine Barracks and the Naval Hospital, that sort of thing, you know.
Did you feel a bit like a fish out of water?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And everyone recognised that, all the guys I worked with, you know. It's funny, yeah. But they looked after me. I felt looked after, you know. They'd say, oh, you know, we'll finish this off. Go and have a little nap in the restroom or go and write some poetry, you know. But I did, you know, and then I did do, you know, work as well, but they were sort of very, quite generous with me about, you know, time and so on. That was the working gangs, but, you know, the other bosses up higher, they weren't too happy about my punctuality and timekeeping. Oh dear.
So what happened when you came out of that scene then, Chris?
Well, I just wanted to write, basically, I suppose, and create, you know, do some painting as well. I mean, I was doing, you know, the old sketch and mostly small stuff, really. But I enjoyed doing that and got a lot out of that sort of thing. And I didn't know where it would take me, really. I just wanted to write, I suppose, and I didn't quite know how to... I even went to see one of my old teachers after I'd left school when I was doing my apprenticeship for advice, which direction to go in. And, I mean, it was kind enough to, you know, invite me in, and we had a cup of tea, and he, you know, chatted a bit. He didn't really know a lot, you know. He said, oh, well, you know, you could go to journalism college, or, you know, learn about journalism, get a job in with a newspaper, and all that. That didn't really appeal very much. Anyway, yeah, it's all gone by now. I just thought, well, I'll just carry on writing, you know, and that's what I did, you know. But periodically, you know, it wasn't like every day. So, yeah, I'm not very disciplined, I suppose, with my the way I do it.
I can see how that could actually be a good thing, though, because if you...
Yeah.
I kind of feel like, you know, it's far be it for me to say, but I don't think you would thrive in a straitjacket of discipline. You'll be a bit like having that freedom to just not have any constraints whatsoever on any part of you allows you to
explore,
do what you've done.
Yeah. To a certain extent, yeah. Although it just, I don't know, it's difficult to pick, you know. You can't do it all. I can't do it all. I can't write, I can't paint and whatever else, you know, do voluntary work, gardening, growing organic food, you know, all these things. You know, getting involved with a community group locally and stuff like that, and you know, having a job so I can earn money to, you know, give to charity, or you know, I want to play music. I love playing music with other people. There's so many things, and I just think it's all too much, and I just want to sit and do nothing in the sun, you know, and just enjoy being, and just enjoy being alive. It's that simple, really, I suppose. And when it comes down to it, it is good, you know. It sort of allows all the kinks to sort of disappear in your life, and the most important thing comes to the surface, I suppose. But then, you know, because it's, you know, I'm in a living, you know, I'm in a body and a material world, and I've got to cope with, oh, you know, feeding myself and, you know, all the practical things of living, and I just about keep that together without, you know, reverting to sort of complete filth and degradation. But I can't stand dusting. And so I need a bit of help with that. My daughter very kindly comes and helps me to a certain extent with a bit of cleaning. And there's things like that, you know. I mean, when you're living alone, I think the simpler your life is, the easier it is to keep a certain order and, you know, cleanliness and all that sort of thing. I used to be so obsessed about it. And so, you know, slightly OCD. So, you know, but having lived in relationships with women, that's been sort of balanced out a bit. So I'm sort of, you know, a little bit, you know, dirty around the corners, and but mostly clean, you know, in the centre. It's one way of putting it. So yeah, there's a certain balance that has come back, I suppose, rather than being so obsessed that I have to, you know, keep everything in order and keep everything clean and all the rest of it, you know.
So that's a really good description of life, of your life there. And I'll just say right here, Chris invited me to do this recording in his flat, and it is like a hippie, an old hippie flat, really. I feel very comfortable in here, and it's stuff piled up, and you know, you wouldn't have a chance in hell of finding anything. But it is very comfortable, and it's not terribly dirty. It's cleaner than my house by miles. So, Chris, I just want one more thing I want to talk about before we end this recording. And
there's one more poem.
Yeah, we're going to do the poems. Yeah, we're going to do the poems.
Okay.
As this is a podcast about hippies, and you know, I know you don't like labels, but you are an old hippie.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment.
I think it is one, mate. Okay. You've got through your life. You haven't been corrupted too badly.
No.
You've held on to your principles. You're still here, and you're still, your priorities are still love and peace, really.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I made a vow when I was 18. You know, three things in my life will remain constant, and that is love, truth and harmony, and restoring harmony on this earth. And whatever I do, wherever I am, I'm, you know, maybe it's not always on the surface, but that is the core of my being, of my reason for being here on this earth. You know, I couldn't see any other reason for being here, you know, when it came down to it. You know, I looked at all the other options. Oh, you know, yeah, career. And, you know, oh, yeah, make loads of money. And, oh, you know, all these other avenues of life, you know. And sure, I could have done some of those, even holding on to those three things. But I thought, well, it doesn't matter what I do. So I carried on doing what I was doing and, you know, did the apprenticeship and, you know, periods of working and so on, some longer than others, and different jobs. But all the time, you know, I was conscious of that was my purpose, not the job. My purpose for being here in a human body and living this life is love in all its forms and the ultimate love and the ultimate truth, and knowing that, and because I could see what was going on in the world, I wanted to be a part of helping to restore harmony and balance on the earth, and that was the third thing. And so that was my, you know, that was my sort of turning point in my life, I suppose, when I was 18.
Yeah, that's really good to hear, and I think I think it's really great that, you know, well, more than 56 years later even, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, still hanging in there. And against huge odds I feel in my life, sometimes I feel like, what's the point? But there's something in me that that will never let that go. I hope it will never let that go.
No. Yeah.
And when I when I was young and the hippie thing started up, and I just thought, yes, this is something I can really relate to. And it had a huge effect on me, and it kind of changed my life and gave me a direction. I don't know if you could talk about that at all, or do you think yours was just a personal, do you think you were influenced by any external stuff?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, in the 60s was great, you know, period of unrest and, you know, as well as positive things happening with, you know, especially in the area of music and creativity. And, you know, young people just really sort of going for, you know, changing the world, you know. And that's what was needed. I could see that, and I was part of it. You know, I wanted to be a part of that. But I didn't necessarily think of myself as a hippie, you know. I mean, it was a funny thing, you know. I mean, I think it was more of an American thing, and that got taken over from, maybe even from England, I don't know. But I felt like, well, we had beatniks here, you know, first of all. and artists, you know, who were slightly, you know, eccentric, and poets and writers, musicians, you know. And then it sort of started getting more open, I suppose, more public and more well received by a lot more people, you know, especially young people, because they could see, you know, well, there's a lot that needs changing in this world, and maybe it's always, you know, although it went underground to a certain extent, and the music became underground and all that, you know, and political, it got, some people got more into politics and some people dropped out. We had this, you know, we got together, this group in Plymouth, a mix of socialists, anarchists, Trotskyists, and sort of, you know, hippie freak type people, you know, started talking together and had a meeting or two. So we decided to get, you know, try and do something together, and we got a community centre together at the top of a warehouse, and installed a, you know, one of those football games, and one or two other things, a few chairs and settees, and printing duplicator printing thing machine to do a magazine. And we, you know, it was quite exciting and good, you know.
Where was that, Chris?
In Plymouth.
Yeah, whereabouts?
Oh, in Union Street, off Union Street, one of the back streets. I think Shane, who, you know, he said he had a furniture workshop there at some point. I don't know if he still got it.
Did it have a name?
No, but it was above an old furniture workshop.
You know, your community centre, did you have a name for it or anything?
Just Plymouth Community Centre, that was it, really. And we had rules, you know, no drink and no drugs. But, you know, obviously, you know, there were one or two people who were... you know, prone to drugs and drink in those days. And anyway, it was a local poet, Ken the poet, came to the centre one day, and I don't know if he realised it, but anyway, he was... had a lump of hashish in his pocket, and at that moment he was in the loo, I think, and the police walked in, and you know, with a search warrant. So he got hauled out, and you know, pockets turned out, and everyone else as well, you know, and but they were happy they got somebody, you know. And they went away, and then the landlord kicked us out, you know, basically. And that was the end of the community centre, and it sort of split everyone up. Everyone, you know, we all left, and we didn't meet up very often after that. And it was usually in small groups, and... everyone went off and, you know, carried on living their lives, and most people got really disillusioned and a bit lost, I think. And I just, I don't know, I can't remember, I moved away, I think, ended up squatting and in Plymouth first, and then moved up north to Manchester, and then Liverpool.
So that's a nice description of the early days of the what I might call the hippie scene in Plymouth.
Yeah.
And now you're living in a very alternative, one of the most alternative towns in England, really, Totnes.
Yeah.
How do you feel it's all going regards, you know, you said one of the three things that you set out to do was, you know, help with the consciousness of the people or whatever. Yeah. You said it better than that.
Restore harmony,
yeah,
and balance.
Yeah. Do you feel positive about that, Chris, or...?
Yeah, to a certain extent, I do, yeah. Sometimes I feel, you know, a bit despairing and despondent about the world and all the rest of it, but I feel it is, you know, changing, and that people are responding more to a kinder sort of approach to human. And although there's still hard nuts around, you know. I mean, I saw it years ago as the restoring of harmony and balance is the restoration of harmony and balance within each human being. And we are, okay, you know, we might be in a masculine body, but what does that mean? And what does being human mean? Because there are female bodies, and it's like, okay, you know, and there's that restoration of balance is between the male and the female, between masculine and feminine. And there's a masculine energy in a woman, and there's a feminine energy in men. And the absence of that is what causes the violence, the aggression, the destruction, ultimately, and throws everything out of balance. And probably, you know, on the other side, if women are, you know, then nothing would maybe get done, you know, there wouldn't be no progress or whatever, you know, because of the passivity of the feminine. And I don't know, you know, I'm not an expert in these things. But that, you know, there's that life energy, and then there's the female and the male energy. And the balance is having the three in one and focused, and, you know, focused on that equanimity and, I don't know what you want to call it, joie de vivre, you know, just loving energy, you know. So that's, you know, and I know that emanates. If a person is in that sphere and in that balance and they're moving about in the world, that emanates and that touches people wherever they are within that sphere of influence. So, you know, although I'm not, you know, again, I'm not claiming that I can do that all the time, but I've, you know, the more I sort of go on in my life and stay in touch with that calm centre within, and, you know, maintain that consciousness through meditation and various other ways, then the easier it becomes to do that, you know.
I remember a long, long time ago when, because I've thought about this kind of stuff all my life, you know, what am I doing here, and what should I be doing while I'm here, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I'm still thinking about it, to be honest, Chris, and I think I'll probably be thinking about it till the day I die. But one thing I remember was that when people started looking east for the answers, and the Beatles went to somewhere.
Yeah.
And they ended up with the Maharishi.
Yeah.
I can't remember where it was they went now. And they came back, and this thing called transcendental meditation came onto the scene.
Yeah.
And the guys that organised it got taken, I don't know, it was pretty effective. And they got this statistic, and I don't know how they got it, that if they could get a certain percentage of people just meditating on this TM every day, it would be enough to actually affect the consciousness of the world for the better. And it's kind of similar to what you're saying. And what I've come to in my life now is that I feel this more and more as I get older, that if I can make some kind of positive contribution to, in some small way, help someone else perhaps feel good, first help myself to feel good, and then if I've got any energy left over, help someone else to feel good. Mm. And that's about, sometimes I just feel like that's about all I can do. And perhaps that's all. And I look at people like my dad, who's he's just coming up to 100 years old, and he's I can kind of see that he's been doing that all his life. I don't know if he knows he's been doing all his life, but he's been a positive guy all his life, trying to project goodness. And it does affect the people that are around him. I think it's kind of important to keep the balance of the population, because there are people doing the opposite.
Although I think that that percentage is getting less, the people who are doing the opposite.
Yeah, I always have this discussion with myself of, you know, is it a fixed thing, or can it change?
Yeah, it can change, all right. It's changing now, but you know, maybe it's not so obvious. But I think, and there are other. The thing is, you know, when we think about it, it's like we think about it in human terms of, you know, human relations and social order and everything in a civilized society or whatever. Whereas there are other factors involved as well, you know, which we don't, you know, on a street level, maybe we're not even aware, we don't take into consideration, you know, cosmic factors. What's the sun doing? You know, where is it in the galaxy? You know, where is it moving? And, you know, what are the planets doing? You know, and some people discount those factors as being, oh, you know, what's that got to do with me being here, you know, doing, you know, shoveling shit on Earth or whatever. But of course it has, you know, because beings, planets, they're composed of elements that we're composed of, and they give off certain vibrations that are, you know, bound to affect us, you know. And so this, you know, it's like, and all the elements, they affect the elements. You know, you only got to think about the moon and the sun, you know, how they affect us. You know, that's without taking into account all the other planets in our solar system. But if you look at history, you know, the evolvement of history through the ages, you can see a progression that goes on, you know, that has gone on and is still going on, you know, where we've reached this point in our evolution, where, you know, we've sort of explored the physical, material realms with science and so on, and reached a certain peak in civilization where it's, you know, unless it moves to another level of consciousness, the civilization will degenerate, because that's what civilizations do and civilizations have done in the past. So, you know, to go on, we need to bring in consciousness more, you know. And that's the only way that we're going to survive as human beings, I think. I mean, there's all sorts of prophecies and you know, visions that people have had about the future and what's happening now, what's going to evolve in the future. And generally it's a mix of, you know, okay, it's first of all, you know, we've got to go through a certain amount of negative stuff to get that out of the way. And so it might be a rough ride for some people, but then we're, you know, going to reach a level where everything will reach a balance and a certain harmony, I think, on Earth, and human beings will, you know, hopefully respect the planet and each other and live in, you know, peace and happiness, or peace and balance and harmony. So that's, yeah, that's my take on today and the future.
That's brilliant, Chris. Okay, so let's, we've got enough time now to record some poetry, which I'm going to intersperse the conversation with.
Okay.
So I'll let you just take it away, really. Introduce each poem, yeah?
Okay. Well, this is quite early. This is 1968. God, 1968, and it's 2022. Jesus. Anyway, it's called One-Handed Messiah. The One-Handed Messiah stands supreme in most of many things, and especially, just lately, in most of my many dreams. He either gives with one hand concealed or takes with one hand revealed, thus leaving me rather one-sided with memories that will never lie dead in none of my many-sided heads, trying to make up the deficiency with rather one-sided efficiency, thus leaving me rather one-handed. Well, this is another one from the same period, more or less, more to do with a relationship or relationships, maybe. The winner of this race, the wind's got nothing on you, babe, the way you change direction with each turn of word, loving and hating alternately, moving, going, not stopping for me nor anyone else, not interested in reviewing the situation nor considering the force of your action. But no one can set change on your heart, and you know it. You're as free as, dare I say it, the wind itself. Maybe you control it. When you stop for a change of weather for a while to love, you burn as a tropic sun, twisting the mind of the innocent passerby remorselessly, searing inside his heart mercilessly, then giving a final twist to the pain, leaving only a blister of hate when you disappear carelessly over the horizon, leaving only salt water on the dry desert sand for the empty, bitter man to drink or die. And you leave no sign in the night that you cry. Sometimes as sunset sorrels the sky, you bring the darkness quicker as you arrive with rain to cloud the window or the doorway. No one doubts your right to say that twilight rain is beautiful in its own sad way, but is that any reason why you should burden others with your tears? Or is it your charm that makes others so gullible when you're near? Rain never was very clear anyway. But only because of the impurities it picks up in its travels through the atmosphere. Perhaps that's where I feature in the mystery of your temperament. When we met, the very air around us was as a catalyst to us both. And when we parted, the cataclysm was fermented within, and it takes time, I know, to either win over or to give in to the changes that have taken place. Perhaps that's where I also feature as the winner of this race.
That's a nice poem, Chris.
Yeah, although sometimes you're the winner and sometimes you're the loser in relationships.
Yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't, it's not a static situation, really. This one's called Great Mystery.
When was this written, Chris?
This is 93. Reasonably recent. A few years old. Great Mystery. The mist in the tree webbed across the grey sky with shadows like arms reaching to embrace me, seeds my woominess, my need to face me. A cast in a car on a cliff in a mist, replete with cake and tea, impels my being to see and understand this secret self, this mystery. In the gloomy mist of twilight, and the blindness of my double bind, finding the root of deception more difficult than I think to find. With day fast losing light and full darkness yet to come, mistaking mist for tree and sand for beach, my time runs out and I sink like a fool, not fooling anyone, to drink the bitter cup of my own delusion. The mist once more swirls and curls and in confusion becomes a tree. The sand particles, silently shifting worlds in water, become sea. The beaches are there beneath the branches that reach out over to shelter me. Shifting my perspective like a mystery detective, I see my soul and submerge beneath the waves, drowning and swimming, eye and heart brimming with tears in an ocean of love and ecstasy. Sadness and regret being met with a gladness I don't expect recedes like the mist before a breeze, like the sea through a net or sand through a sieve, and I'm thankful to know I live in the roots of a mystery created to teach me. This is 94. I was living in Harberton Ford at the time, and it was a fairly quiet place, especially at night. Anyway, this one's called Leave Mercy on the Surface Where It's Needed. The crystal of time transforms the bones of the old, mixing fading memories into now, sat here in the kitchen, ticking steadily through the night, crunching toast, drinking tea, and breathing like a ghost. Savoring a sliver of silence, I enjoy it. Breath, that is. Never the same twice, though no different really. Infinite variety along the microcosmic highway, threading through the macro universe of miracle and magic. I want to lay down my armaments of emotional warfare, befriend I and I, feel compassion for me, for you, let go the bag of grunge and adorn myself and others with feasts of flowers, touches of tenderness, songs of celebration, inspiration and love. We either sink with the ship of fools in doom and gloom, or learn to swim in the inner ocean of endless bliss, seeding the universe with laughter and healing. Outside, late at night, early in the day, spring energy blows away the crusty webs of dust and decay, washes the socks of winter clean and pumps up the bulbs and seeds and feathers and flowers in fertile flow. Take me to the ocean, drown me in love and leave mercy on the surface where it's needed. I really like that one. Well, this is 99. This is another illustration. It's just very short. Go within your heart of hearts with your feet upon the earth. Long for love and long for truth. Seek the meaning, seek the proof of what it is to be a human being and know yourself.
It's very seductive poetry. I've never really listened to poetry. But is that a particular rhythm that you're using? How do you do it? Do you consciously make it like that, or does it just happen?
Well, I suppose that's how I write. And how I don't know.
It's almost got a beat to it.
Yeah, I mean, if a poem has got a rhythm, a beat or whatever, yeah. I mean, some haven't, that's the thing, you know. And the ones that do have, and that if they say something meaningful, those are the ones that I particularly like. Okay, this is 2015, it's not that recent, I suppose, but I'm still working on the most recent ones, really. It's called What's Your Point? I may not be the sharpest tack in the box, but being pointless is my point. Sorry to be blunt, but without my pointlessness, how will you know how sharp you are? Once taken out of the box, I won't go back in. After all, what's the point of a tack that won't pin? I'll remain forever blunt. It's not a pointless sin to have my point bent, turned to its own centre within. You like that one, didn't you?
Well, you performed well there. I should have videoed that one.
Yeah. This is another shortish one. Listen, really listen. Close your eyes, listen, really listen. Inside, I'm ringing like a bell. Can't you hear yourself? I can't tell. My clapper has gone mad with its own music. The vibration shattering boundaries, good and bad. Breaking down barriers from base to dome, rotating on a fulcrum that is the centre within which this sacred silence sounds. I could say more, but it would just be noise, and I don't want to bring you down. Let's just listen more to the silent music, blissfully playing in the hall of the heart. Listen. Really listen.
Very good, Chris. Yeah. I'm a convert, mate. School put me off, but that's good. Chris, I've really, really enjoyed speaking to you this afternoon, and listening to your poetry has been lovely. So thank you so much for that. And yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Okay, Tom, thanks. Yeah, I've enjoyed it too as well. I must say, it's taken me back over a few choices.
Yeah, excellent, mate. And I'll get to work on that and hopefully make a lovely podcast out of it. Thank you so much.
Okay, let me know when it's off and I'll have a listen.
Yeah, take care, mate.
Yeah.
Bye.
All the best. Bye.